It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. The Paulson Institute is based in Chicago, and on its website, it says it's a nonpartisan, independent, privately funded think and do tank, not supported or connected to any government. Their mission is dedicated to fostering U.S.-China relationships and serves to, in their words, maintain global order in a rapidly evolving world. The Paulson Institute was founded in 2011 by the former Treasury Secretary, Henry Paulson. It has offices in Washington, also in Beijing. Earlier this month, a think tank at the Paulson Institute called Macro Polo launched a five-part series podcast titled Heartland Mainland, the Iowa-China Podcast. Here's a little excerpt from the first episode of that podcast called Freshman Orientation, which focuses on the experience of Chinese students here in Iowa. And here's an excerpt with the voice of one of those Chinese students at Iowa State University.
It was so surprising to me because in China, we do have some stereotype. It's like America. Everywhere is like New York. And after I come here, I come to the main. It's called the main international airport. After I go out, two floor, and there was cornfield around, and one of the farmers were waving hand to me. And I literally asked the person, the actress, am I in America? And she said, yeah, you are in America. Okay.
Okay. Des Moines International Airport, of course, Des Moines International Airport. Joining me now, the co-hosts of that podcast, Matt Sheehan is a fellow at Macro Polo, in addition to being co-host of Heartland Mainland, the Iowa-China podcast. He joins us from the Bay Area, from Oakland. Matt, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having us.
Also, the other co-host with us from Chicago, joining us today from Chicago, Holly Ha, is also a multimedia and research associate at Macro Polo. Holly, welcome to you.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Joining us via Skype. This is interesting, this podcast, the Iowa-China podcast. Holly, start us off. Tell us more about the focus of this podcast. It's about, in the intentionally you made, this is more than just the trade war that gets all the headlines.
Yeah. So while the trade war is definitely a hook, during our research, we really found Iowa to be kind of a microcosm of U.S.-China relations when it comes to students, politics, agriculture, and as well as manufacturing. And that is what our four episodes are about. So in terms of students, as you heard just on the tape, there are a lot of Chinese students coming to public Iowa universities every year, and we wanted to explore their personal experience in our podcast, as well as the financial impact they bring to the universities. And when it comes to politics, there is a special relationship between Xi Jinping and Iowa, specifically with Xi Jinping and Muscatine when he visited Iowa just as a county official in 1985. So our second episode is kind of focused on that special relationship and how that ripples through the politics of today. And the next two episodes, agriculture and manufacturing. Agriculture is kind of focused on the trade war, and we zoom in on one farmer who is kind of caught in the crossfire of all of this. And at last, manufacturing, we talk about how made in China and Chinese exports have hurt business in Iowa.
Matt Sheehan, talk a little bit about how this podcast was born, because some might ask, why focus on Iowa when you talk about U.S. Chinese trade relations or relationships? What makes Iowa's connection with China special in your eyes?
Yeah, we wanted to look for a place where kind of the rubber meets the road in U.S.-China relations. I think a lot of times you're just reading the news, this can seem like a very abstract conflict. You know, it's just something that happens between presidents and superpowers. But from Holly's personal experience and my own, we've seen that this is something that really, especially today, the impacts of that relationship, they go all the way down to the grassroots, to ordinary people across the country. And then the actions taken by those ordinary people, by university professors, admissions officers, mayors, small businesses and farmers, those impacts end up sort of filtering all the way back up to national policy, to the White House even. And we wanted to find a place that kind of embodied that two-way trickle-up and trickle-down relationship here. And we found that Iowa was just a fascinating place to begin. It's really somewhere where a lot of these main strands that Holly just laid out, where they're all kind of woven together, because Iowa is both a microcosm of a lot of what you see across many U.S. states, but it also has some really unique factors. So it's a microcosm in the way that these issues with Chinese students arriving at U.S. universities, especially public universities, that's something we've seen across the country. Mm-hmm. But it's also something that's been particularly acute in Iowa. For a while, Iowa had one of the largest percentages of Chinese students relative to international students. Almost half of all international students in Iowa were from China. So that makes the Iowa University sort of uniquely dependent on Chinese students in a way. So that microcosm effect is one thing that drew us in, but it's also really the special characteristics of Iowa right now. It happens to be right in the center of the trade war, which makes it particularly unique in terms of soybean exports and corn exports and the impact on farmers, and also the political relationships that Holly started to lay out, both with China's president spending time in Iowa over the years, and also with the next U.S. president being filtered through Iowa right now with the most important contest coming up. So that combination of Iowa being representative of a lot of what goes on in the U.S., but also having these unique strands, that's what really drove us to dig in here.
Mm-hmm. Back to the topic, the focus of your very first episode of Heartland, Mainland. Holly, living in Iowa City for the past 20 years, it's certainly, and Iowa City is the site of one of Iowa's large public universities. It's not to be missed, the rising affluence of Chinese students, the number of students in Iowa City, in Ames, at the University of Northern Iowa as well. Also very affluent students, you can see. Talk a little bit, Holly, about the perspective of Chinese students coming here to the heartland, to Iowa's public universities to study. What draws them here?
Yeah, so we actually posed this very same question to a student we interviewed while we were in Iowa City. And the answer that he gave us was, "I didn't choose Iowa, Iowa chose me." So that basically just means that for a lot of Chinese students, because of the differences in education in China, a lot of us didn't really have a choice when it comes to, you know, which city in America they want to go to. Normally, they just apply to a bunch of universities, and whatever university accepts them, they just like fly out here on their own. So for a lot of people, that's really their first image, first perception of America. Like for Feng Shuo, the person we heard earlier, his first image of America is Des Moines, Iowa. And for me, when I was 14 years old, when I first came to America, my first perception was Appleton, Wisconsin. Mm. So I think for a lot of students, they just sort of hopped on the plane and came here, didn't really know what we're getting ourselves into, and just kind of like taking the challenge of integrating into another culture, mm-hmm. which is often, you know, filled with really good stories, but also a lot of difficulties.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask, just from your personal experience, when you came from China to the U.S., moved here, was there any sort of culture shock? What do you remember most of those first hours and first days about what was different than your homeland, China?
I flew here by myself, and I was living with a host family. I came from a fairly big city in China, Jinan, in Shandong province. So my first impression of Appleton, Wisconsin was just, you know, where are the high buildings? Where are people going to work? Where are people going to school? And so that took a while to adjust, that everybody was just like living in houses as opposed to, you know, high rises and apartments. For the cultural shock, I think definitely the high school that I went to is a private high school, and it's not a very diverse high school. So I was probably one of a handful of Asian students there. But because they were already Asian students, exchange students at my high school, I don't think my American peers necessarily really bothered to come out of their way to get to know us. So definitely when I first went there, didn't really feel welcomed and had a very hard time just adjusting to life there, you know, knowing how to get to know how to small talk, how to make friends, how to, you know, raise your hand in class to answer a question. And that definitely took me a long time, a couple months to adjust.
Mm-hmm. If you've just joined us, Holly Ha is one of my guests, along with Matt Sheehan. They are co-hosts of Heartland Mainland, the Iowa-China podcast. It's a five-part podcast series put on by a think tank at the Paulson Institute called Macro Polo. Matt, let me jump to episode two of the podcast here. This is one that focuses on Muscatine. You and Holly visited Muscatine, and for those who know about Sino-American relationships over the years, Muscatine plays a big part. Our former governor, Branstad, happened to strike up a friendship with the future leader of China. Tell us a little bit about focusing on Muscatine and some background there.
Muscatine kind of leaped out of nowhere to become a very important place in the U.S.-China relationship. That leap, when it kind of came onto the national spotlight or international spotlight, really was in 2012. And that was when Vice President Xi Jinping and the next leader of China, now the current president of China, Xi Jinping, visited Muscatine. But all the seeds for that 2012 visit were sowed back in 1985. At that time, Xi Jinping was just a pretty middling county official in northern China. And he was sent to the U.S., to Iowa, as part of a food processing delegation. So a group of about five or six Chinese officials who came to Iowa and were taken around the state to learn about food processing. And they visited schools, they visited factories, they stayed in homestays, and had a lot of time just kind of getting to know America at the grassroots. Mm-hmm. And the place where Xi Jinping did a homestay and stayed with an American family and got to know them was in Muscatine. So that sort of sowed it gave the future Chinese president his first impressions of life in American home and what Americans themselves are like. So that first trip back in 1985 was, I think, largely forgotten, especially by the American side, until 2011, when Xi Jinping met Iowa Governor Terry Branstad in Shanghai. And when he met him, he handed him a business card with the name of their tour guide on that 1985 trip and said, "Do you know this man? Can you put us back in touch?" And so that sort of set into motion a series of events that brought Xi Jinping back to Iowa in 2012 and back to Muscatine. And now the city of Muscatine has in many ways been reshaped by these two visits. It's, you know, a relatively small city, not a whole lot of international connections, maybe not a lot of outside investment to begin with. But after that 2012 visit, you started to see a ton of interest from Chinese tourists, some from Chinese investors. And we went out to see how this has impacted Muscatine. And one of the first places we stopped was at the house where Xi Jinping stayed in 1985, which has now been turned basically into a museum of that visit and a museum of U.S.-China relations. You see the very bed that Xi Jinping stayed in. It's now sort of guarded by guardrails so that Chinese tourists who come in can, you know, sort of stand there and see where their leader once slept. And it's a very interesting and strange nugget. It's impacted the city in other ways. They now bring in a lot of Chinese musical groups, a lot of cultural exchanges, investment in a hotel downtown. And yeah, we just wanted to get that kind of granular look at the ways one Iowa town rose to sudden prominence in China and how that's affected it from there on out.
Let me turn back to you, Holly, and just ask, how many hours have you spent researching? How many hours have you spent crisscrossing Iowa, I imagine, to make this five-part podcast?
We have probably over 100 hours of tape after interviewing about 80 people across Iowa. I think we visited more than a dozen cities, and most of the time, Matt would be flying in from California, and we drove from Chicago and just kind of make our road trip around Iowa. And unfortunately, I don't have a driver's license. So all of the thousands of miles is usually Matt driving And on the way, we will do, you know, some prep for the interviews. And before the trip, we always get together and just sort of pull articles together, trying to sort out a narrative that we want to pursue in the episodes. Mm-hmm. So yeah, a lot of time spending on this podcast, and probably I would say almost maybe 10 months of legwork going to this before the whole thing is published.
Matt, how did these five episodes develop thematically? Did you know from the get-go what you wanted to focus on, or was that a matter of sort of exploring themes?
There were some that were pretty obvious and very central. So, you know, I'm not going to talk about Iowa and China without talking about agriculture. Beyond that and the political connections, the Xi Jinping story that we just alluded to, I think the episodes on Chinese students at Iowa universities, on the impact on manufacturing, those in many ways emerged organically. For example, I myself didn't know that eastern Iowa, that cities like Davenport and north of there, were really heavily impacted by Chinese exports in the mid-2000s. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that that part of the state has more of a Rust Belt quality instead of more Farm Belt. So that's something that we kind of stumbled into, but found it to be really rich in terms of material and in terms of pulling at these threads of the U.S.-China relationship. And then a major part of what we did is we're looking for good stories. We're looking for characters and people that can really drive these narratives forward. I think, as mentioned earlier, the U.S.-China relationship can feel very abstract and scary and like something that only happens sort of in policy papers. But we really wanted to find the people who are at the absolute cutting edge, who are right at the forefront of building these relationships. So for each episode, we had to find someone who kind of embodies it in that way. In the student episode, it was the young man Feng Shuo, who we heard at the very beginning. And for later episodes, agriculture, finding a farmer who sort of became a celebrity in China after Xi Jinping visited his farm, and then so on for the episodes in politics and agriculture. So it was kind of this combination of saying, what's important in the U.S.-China relationship? What's unique about Iowa? And who are the people that can help us bring these stories to life?
Mm-hmm. Holly, is there a personality that we haven't mentioned that you'd like to mention as someone who jumped out and helped you tell your story?
While we were reporting Iowa, we actually met this Chinese businessman who is, I think, the president of the China-Iowa Association. We met him by chance on our first trip to Iowa. And if I have to describe him, he's the kind of person who's just masterful at networking. If you're in a room with him, he will just like connect with you with like 10 people right away. So thanks to him, we were able to talk to a lot of students because he happens to own an education company. And because of him, we got to connect with our central character in the agriculture episode, the farmer whose name is Rick Kimberly, because this Chinese businessman has been doing some business with him. And we also, through him, we also got to know the person who was driving Xi Jinping around during his trip in 1985, Luca Baroni. So he's just kind of a very interesting character whom we met and sort of give us help along the way. Like almost every time we asked him, do you know this person? His answer is always, yes, let me connect you to him right away.
All right. Well, in closing here, I wanted to get your views on your takeaways here. It seems that this podcast series is all about sort of tracing the relationship between Iowa and China as you said, a microcosm of how China impacts states all across the country. But also, it seems to me, in listening to some of your podcasts here and hearing you talk about it, part of this is dispelling myths that are built up just from consuming the day-to-day headlines we have, don't you think, Matt?
Yeah, I think that this was a real eye-opening experience for me personally. You know, as someone who I lived in China and worked as a journalist there, I've come back and worked on U.S.-China relations doing kind of analysis. I often feel like I'm sort of translating between these two countries and cultures, trying to help Americans get China, trying to help Chinese people get America. But for me, this time, spending this much time in Iowa, traveling around, talking to all different kinds of people, it also kind of revealed to me how much translation there is to do within the U.S. when it comes to China. in Washington, D.C., there's sort of a very one-dimensional conversation about China today. It's all about this big sort of scary China threat. It's all about geopolitical conflict. It's all very abstract in that way. But one of the biggest takeaways, and what was very surprising and kind of hopeful for me, was that in talking with all these different people across Iowa who are affected by and who are affecting U.S.-China relations, that people at the grassroots actually have a pretty nuanced take on things, a pretty nuanced understanding of all everything that's at play. So you have, you know, university professors, you have farmers who, you know, regularly make trips out to China to build up these trade ties. You have manufacturers who have dealt with Chinese imports, but who have also worked with Chinese partners. And you have Chinese students like Peng Shuo or really like Holly that are seeing this relationship as a very face-to-face relationship, as something that happens between people, and that those conversations really matter. They end up filtering back up to the national level, and sort of the decisions made by ordinary people in Iowa, they really do end up affecting the national sort of superpower relationship between the two countries.
Holly and Matt, we've run out of time. Holly, perhaps on the way out, you can tell us how our listeners can find out more. Give the podcast a listen.
Sure thing. Yeah, you can find Heartland Mainland, the Iowa China podcast, on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, CastBox, and also Google Podcasts. You can also come to our website, which is macropolo.org. Under Multimedia Podcast, you can stream all the available episodes now.
Okay, very good. Holly He and Matt Sheehan, co-hosts of Heartland Mainland, the Iowa China podcast. Matt and Holly, thanks for joining us this half hour.
Thank you. This was a pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.